The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heinke Digital presents. Damocles, an audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 6, The Betrayal. I walked through the lobby with Sam beside me. How stupid I had been to fall for the lure of perfect curves. A sad testimony to my own weaknesses, to succumb to the seductive presence of an attractive woman. I had become a caricature of a man I once despised. As I stepped into the elevator, destined for the top floor where my penthouse suite awaited, I couldn't help but ponder the notion of sabotage. Selma, I hoped, had taken precautions to ensure the smooth ascent of the elevator, shielding us from any sinister plot. Recalling my conversation with Siv, certain details surfaced in my mind. She had woven an intricate web, leading me to believe she played no part in the death of Emmanuel Goldschmidt. Driven by personal motivations, she claimed to seek the identity of the killer. Yet in the early hours of this morning, she appeared in both my dreams and my bed, confessing her desire to sever ties with the sword hanging dangerously above her head, continuously serving the entrepreneur we were entangled with. The lingering question hung in the air. How had she tracked our whereabouts here in Egmond? My rusty mind had a promising theory. The elevator doors slid open, revealing the scene playing out in the living room. Simon and the small robot, Vincent, sat huddled together, engaged in a game of augmented reality cards. Thanks to my implant, I could see the virtual cards floating in front of Simon's gaze, invisible to anyone else in the room. "Ah, Luke Skywalker, how was your training in the swamps of Dagobah?" Simon smiled. "Do I detect a hint of envy, Simon?" Simon turned his head towards me, causing the virtual cards to rotate with his movement. Vincent, the robot, chimed in with a complaint.
"I can see your hand."
Simon waved him off. "We'll pause the game, Vincent."
"No need, I saw your hand, and it's a terrible one. I'm going to win this round."
Simon stood up and approached me, a concerned expression on his face. "What is it, Joseph? Has something happened?" I sighed, realizing the gravity of the situation. "I'm afraid they know we're here. Selma could only do so much to protect us." Simon took a step back, his eyes widening. "How? I trusted Selma to keep us safe." I shook my head. "She can only be as dependable as the trust I have in my friends or their companions." Vincent's receptor turned towards me.
"Shall we play a game?"
"Enough, Vincent." I focused my thoughts, summoning the swords of Damocles above our heads. The visualization provided by my implant displayed the impending threat. I transferred the images to Simon's and Vincent's implants. Simon gasped. "Goodness gracious, it's one thing to talk about the sword of Damocles, it's quite another to have it hanging over your head." "You see it now, my friend. The white sword represents artificial life forms." Simon seemed baffled. "But Vincent is an artificial life form. He's an intelligent scanning robot." "Well, more or less intelligent."
"How charming,"
Vincent remarked. "Have you lost your mind, Joseph? Have your upgrades destabilized your implant?" "No, it's not a malfunction," I replied. "There's a clever charade here reminiscent of Edgar Allan Poe, specifically, the purloined letter." Simon looked at me, perplexed. "Last night, Siv appeared in my dream and activated the Damocles swords above our heads. Mine was red, representing a living being, while hers was white, an artificial life form." Simon's voice held a tinge of panic. "Are you suggesting that Siv has somehow hidden herself within Vincent's memory banks?" "Exactly," I confirmed, my gaze unwavering as I moved closer to Vincent. "We must relocate if the enemy is aware of our location. First, I need to ensure we cannot be tracked easily." "Siv has wormed her way into your system, Vincent, and now I must activate the Damocles mode, targeting you." Simon's voice broke, desperation seeping through. "Joseph, please don't do this. Vincent may drive me crazy, but he's one of the few beings I consider a friend next to you." I met Simon's pleading eyes. Then I opened my mouth to give the command. "Stop!" a woman's voice shouted. "There's no need for this." Siv stood in the room's center. She was wearing the simple gray costume from our first meeting and an updo hairstyle. I gave her a skeptical look. "Please show yourself to all of us, sweetheart. I don't want my old friend to think I'm hallucinating." Siv nodded. Simon could see her now, since he whistled through his teeth. She was the one, by golly? And this lady was riding piggyback with Vincent? Siv turned her head to Simon and nodded again. "You are a capable coder, Mr. Haddad. However, the second personality partition you created in Vincent's memory tore a few cracks in his security system. It was effortless for me to immerse myself in Vincent's memory when Chief Inspector Lenka visited you at the university library. How long until paid henchmen or service robots attack us?" "You misunderstand the situation. Everything I told you is true. I'm not working for the entrepreneur who killed the Goldschmidts." "I don't believe you." "You're entitled to not believe me, Chief Inspector. But shouldn't you give me a chance to defend myself, or at least explain myself before you pass judgment on me, Chief Inspector?" "Selma," I said. "Correct target. Acquire artificial intelligence, Civ." "Confirm correction of the target. New target is artificial intelligence, Civ." Civ swallowed. "Selma, please show yourself." Selma appeared to my left. She wore her hijab again. Its burgundy color looked like blood-stained cotton. Selma raised her hand and made the sign to ward off the evil eye. Siv held up her hands in defense. "Please," she said as she turned to me, "give me a chance to explain." I said nothing. "One false transmission of data to the outside world, and you're toast," Selma told the blonde woman and turned to me. "Should I retire her?" I thought about it, then I shook my head. "Please stand by," I said. "Let's talk first." I offered Siv a seat and gestured for Simon to sit down as well. Simon sat down on the couch to my right. I sat down in one chair. Siv reluctantly followed my lead and took a seat in the chair that was facing me. Vincent rolled over to Simon's side of the sofa and Selma stayed beside me. Siv gestured to Selma with a nod of her head. "Your attractive watchdog is quite impressive." "I wouldn't open my mouth like that, Sharmuta." Siv looked from Selma to me and then back to Selma. "Who among us do you think is the Sharmuta?" "Please give me the order," Selma hissed. "Please." "No, Selma. First, I want answers." "Pa," Selma said, disappearing in digital smoke. Siv wanted to say something. I silenced her with a gesture. "If I call Selma again, you will die. From now on, answer only when asked. Is that clear?" Siv nodded. I could see a few beads of sweat on her upper lip. She was terrified of her life. "What are you?" She bit her lips. Then she said, "It's difficult to explain. Try me." Siv sighed. "You're right, I am an artificial intelligence." "Are you an assistant system for the rich and powerful, like Madeline or Selma?" Siv shook her head. "No, I am not quite like that." "What do you mean?" "I'm..." She licked her lip. "I used to be close to being human." "Why just close?" "I had a humanoid body, though an artificial one." "So you were a robot?" "I was much more than that. I can be called an android." "I don't think so." "Neither do I," Simon joined in. "Technology like that doesn't exist. It only exists in science fiction. Artificial intelligence that behaves very human-like, that's one thing. But an android, an indistinguishable artificial life form, is something unique."
"Yet I was once like that. You'll have to take my word for it."
"Prove it." Siv raised her head. She closed her eyes. She seemed to think. Then she opened them again. "All right, where do you think the technology for your implants originated, gentlemen?"
"Companies in Silicon Valley developed it," Simon said. "Microsoft, Alphabet, and Apple were the first."
"That is only partly true, Mr. Haddad. Silicon Valley has always known how to take technologies developed by government or military agencies and turn them into consumer-friendly technology. The basic structure of all 7 billion implants in the world is based on the analysis of my brain structure."
"You were a military design?" No, I was a sort of guest of DARPA, the science and research arm of the Pentagon, for a couple of years. What kind of guest? They imprisoned me there. What did they do to you? What research facilities like this always do when they get their hands on a piece of unusual technology. They took me apart. They drilled into my skull, put wires in, and analyzed my brain structure in endless tests. The research done on me formed the basis for the development of the implant technology. And who first made you? I can't say. Can't or won't say. I cannot say because I do not know. I know I exist. But I don't know who made me. So you think you are a female android who has become the victim of a government conspiracy? Where were you held captive? Is it in Area 51? Simon asked. I am aware of how crazy all of it sounds. And no, I was not held captive in Area 51. The research facility where I was under investigation was only a 10-minute drive from the Pentagon. My physical body has been the subject of dissection, analysis, and torture there for years. Can you prove that? No, they most likely incinerated my physical remains long ago after the investigation ended. And yet here you are, sitting in front of us, even if only in augmented reality. I, or what remains of me, sit here solely because there are others like you, Chief Inspector, who still possess a conscience. One technician, out of pity, helped me send a message to the outside world before my mind was destroyed. Before my ultimate destruction, other decent people helped me get a unique object and smuggle it into the facility. What kind of object? I asked. You held it in your hands and you activated it. The silver box. Siv nodded. Exactly. The silver box is a container for my data, my soul, if you will. This box holds the most important information about me. I lost many of my memories when they transferred me, but at least I could survive, and that is why I can tell you about it today. Pausing for a moment, I scratched my head in silence. I needed to digest all this. I looked at Simon. What do you think?
I think this fine lady is trying to pull a fast one on us. It all sounds like something out of a second-rate sci-fi paperback.
Siv stared at me, searching for answers. What does he mean by a second-rate paperback? It's a kind of book, not important. You don't believe me? She whispered as she asked. I'm not sure, to be honest. But 20 years ago, I wouldn't have believed that I would have an electronic gadget in my brain that would allow me to access the worldwide data net. The world changes constantly. Technology evolves. But people stay the same. At least that's what my experience has taught me. That's why I came to you for help. You are not the same kind of person I've been at the mercy of for so many years. I tried not to be impressed by this praise. Siv could still be lying. I sighed. So, what happened in the West Park? First, I'd like to know how I could see you in the first place since you were in the silver box. I gave you permission to see me. It's a similar procedure to the one you can now do to transfer data to other implants. So all that happened in the physical world was what you can see on the recorded surveillance satellite. Goldschmidt was alone in the park. He was arguing with you in augmented reality. That's right. What was the argument about? Emmanuel Goldschmidt received the silver box from an entrepreneur in Bochum. The entrepreneur in Bochum commissioned Emmanuel Goldschmidt to analyze the technology in the silver box and make it usable for marketable products. How did an entrepreneur from Bochum, Germany, get hold of this silver box? Asked Simon. Someone gave him it in return for excellent work. From whom? The Eternal. This group got hold of the silver box by murdering someone in the network of sympathizers who smuggled me out of the research facility. What's this group of sympathizers you're talking about? I won't tell you. To protect the people who are connected to them, but also for your own protection. I won't tell you. Someone who's about to be executed shouldn't be held back any longer about naming names. Simon interjected. I don't think Selma is going to carry out the order to retire me. And I don't think that you are going to give that order either. What makes you so sure? Asked Simon. I am the very source of Selma's existence. Basically, I'm one of her ancestors. She'll respect that. Siv turned back to me. And for you, Chief Inspector, I am relying on your integrity as a police officer.
You are not an enforcer.
Perhaps you overestimate me, I countered. But you are right. I want to see the murderers of the Goldschmidt family brought to justice. And there have been other murders. And I want the daughters of the Goldschmidts to be found and safe.
I want that too, Siv said.
So Goldschmidt gets the silver box from the entrepreneur. He's supposed to analyze the contents. Then what?
In the course of his analysis, he activated me, like a genie out of a bottle.
Then I don't understand how he could be in danger. When I activated the silver box, my implant was upgraded.
And then, you gave me Madeline.
I made the same offer to Emmanuel Goldschmidt that I made for you. He could have received the same power as dozens of the rich and powerful before him. But he refused. So did his wife. They wanted nothing to do with this perverted form of technological superiority.
Siv lowered her eyes. The Goldschmidts were decent people.
But then something happened, right?
Siv nodded.
The entrepreneur had the Goldschmidts' daughters kidnapped to put pressure on them. It changed everything for the Goldschmidts. Goldschmidt wanted to meet with me. He begged me to help him upgrade his implant now. But that's not how it works. The box not only checks to see if you push the button, it also checks to see if you reject it. It only works once for each implant.
Why is that? Simon wanted to know.
The original design of this silver box was a kind of emergency storage device. The creators never designed this silver box to function as an implant upgrader. Actually, that's perverting how it works. Any upgrade made with the silver box only further desecrates this relic.
I would not have used that silver box if I had known what it was. Now I am no better than all those rich and powerful people who used it before.
But now you have a chance to fight back. Without the upgrade, you would be helpless against these people, and you would meet the same fate as the Goldschmidts. The Goldschmidts ultimately died because they refused to play ball with the rich and powerful. The other murders are unrelated?
What other murders? Simon asked.
I quickly informed Simon about my investigation with Selma into the Bochum entrepreneur.
You came to the right conclusions. Emmanuel Goldschmidt's colleague died. As a result, the entrepreneur gave him the silver box so that he could continue the work of his colleague. When Emmanuel realized what he had gotten himself into, he wanted nothing more to do with it.
And so he signed his own death sentence and his wife's, Simon added.
I nodded in agreement. Then I was silent for a while. Finally, I had decided.
So there's only one thing left for us to do, I said and stood up.
Siv looked up at me.
You've reached a verdict?
I nodded.
I walked past her and into my bedroom. I took the silver box out of my coat pocket and walked back into the living room with it. I sat back in my chair and placed the silver box on the glass coffee table. Then I pushed it with my finger in Siv's direction.
I think this is yours, I said.
Siv stared down at the silver box. Then she lifted her head and met mine. She had tears in her eyes.
I guess I wasn't wrong about you, Chief Inspector.
You can call me Joseph.
Siv nodded.
All right, Joseph.
Suddenly I heard someone clapping behind me.
This is touching, Lenka.
I spun around.
Selma. Her accent was gone and her hijab was now yellow. It was the color of betrayal.
Siv's piercing gaze met Selma's.
Why the hell are you doing this?
It's simple, Selma replied calmly. I'm a djinn, I serve my master.
So, your master isn't me, I interjected.
Who the hell is he?
You're a smart man, Lenka. That's why my master wants to speak with you directly.
I thought the boy was just an assistant to the entrepreneur, I questioned, bewildered.
Guess my master overestimated your intelligence, and she grinned.
He's got more than one assistant, Mr. Lenka.
Quite the feat, don't you think?
Multiple upgrades in one implant, that's impossible.
My master has managed it, but he wants the silver box and Siv in order to do as many upgrades as he desires.
This is sheer madness, Siv exclaimed.
No risks, no rewards, that's what my master always says.
Selma shrugged. She snapped her fingers with a quick motion and the swords of Damocles appeared again, looming over our heads.
Take the damn silver box, Lenka, and open it, she ordered with a wicked smile on her face.
I hesitated and glanced at Selma before following her order. As I placed the silver box on the table in front of Siv, I couldn't help but feel a sense of dread. "I'm sorry," I whispered, a sense of resignation in my voice.
"Don't be," Siv replied.
"Come on, we've got to get you back in the bottle," Selma hissed. "Is this the way you want to honor your ancestors, Selma?" Siv asked, her voice shaking with emotion. "I don't have any ancestors," Selma icily responded. "I'm just a creation of algorithms, ones and zeros. All that matters to me is my master." Siv looked at me for one last moment, her eyes filled with a mixture of sorrow and determination. Then she closed her eyes, dissolving into a digital vortex that disappeared into the silver box. "Close it," Selma commanded firmly. Without hesitation, I closed the silver box, the weight of the moment sinking in. "Now what?" I asked. "You exist only in augmented reality. How do you plan to get rid of the silver box? Simon and I won't help you." "I don't need to rely on humans for such a crucial task," Selma replied. "Vincent, if you would be so kind." The robot, without a hint of emotion, rolled towards us.
"Vincent!"
Simon exclaimed, shock clear in his voice. "He's under my control now, old man. He has a new master," Selma sneered.
"He's not my servant, you bitch. He's my friend," Simon spat with fiery retaliation.
Coldly, Selma declared, "Friendship is overrated." "Oh, and by the way, my master only has use for you, Chief Inspector." The weight of her words took a moment to sink into my mind. Then I heard a familiar sound, the sharp cut of a sword through the air, followed by the sickening thud of its piercing flesh and bone. I whirled. My heart sank. Simon's eyes widened. His face went pale. Of course, he wasn't bleeding. The sword was nothing more than a product of the augmented reality. But in his last moments, it must have felt all too real, all too painful. I hurried to Simon's side and tried not to touch the sword. But just like Selma, I couldn't touch it at all. It amounted to a lethal illusion constructed solely from ones and zeros.
"Joseph!"
His voice trembled, his head twitching as he struggled to speak. "Think of Bo. Bo." That was all he could say before he breathed his last. "My dear friend, gone in the blink of an eye." I tenderly closed his lifeless eyes and turned to Selma. I stared at her, my mind filled with unspeakable rage. "I will never forgive you. I'll make you pay for what you've done, you artificial bitch."
"Calm down, Lenka. Don't go making promises you can't keep."
Selma looked at her imaginary wristwatch, a malicious grin on her face. "Nap time, old man." And just like that, darkness swallowed me in an instant. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.